Midnight Facts for Insomniacs. I just learned something. Oh, I'm having fun now.
There's no human that we know of who can talk to the fishes. Actually, anyone can talk to fishes. It's just whether the fishes can talk back. You could yell at the fishes.
Oh, and I have. Oh, have I yelled at fishes.
That's not impressive. That's just quarantine. That's just I've spent too much time in my damn house, and I have a fish tank. All right, Duncan.
Hit me.
Another listener suggestion.
All right.
This is suggested by Chrissy on Instagram.
Thank you, Chrissy.
And we are talking about superpowers.
All right, cool.
But in particular, we're talking about real-life superpowers.
Real-life superpowers?
Yeah, so we'll get right into it. You've seen the movie Unbreakable.
Yeah.
So you're familiar with Mr. Glass.
Yeah.
Extremely fragile bones.
Yeah.
There's a medical condition that's very similar, osteoporosis.
Yeah.
Which results in extremely low bone density. And over time, bones become brittle and porous. Well, if you remember, the movie theorized that if there are people with a disease that causes brittle bones, there must also be people with the opposite condition.
Right.
Which isn't stellar logic.
No, and it also would seem to suggest somebody with bones so dense or so strong that they wouldn't be functional. You need a certain amount of flexation, a certain amount of like ability to deal with incoming vibrations and things like that. Like,
yeah, and we'll get to that because that's one of the downsides of a lot of these quote superpowers is that they kind of come with drawbacks.
Right.
There are reasons that we have a lot of the fragility and the weaknesses.
Yeah.
But they're there for a reason. And yeah, it's not great logic because like there are diseases that cause blindness. That doesn't mean that there are diseases that cause X-ray vision or, you know, that's not the way it works. It's not like there's a white and a black for everything. Mm. But in this case, M. Night Shyamalan may have been onto something. The disease osteoporosis is caused by a defect in the LRP5 gene. And it turns out that a different mutation in that exact same gene can have the opposite effect.
Hmm.
Researchers discovered a family in Connecticut, and members of that family have incredibly dense bones. The members who tested positive for that condition have never had bone fractures or breaks. They have very wide and deep jaws with almost inhuman thickness. It's very strange. From what I gather, they're pretty much built like cavemen.
Well, I was going to say, it sounds pretty troglodyte there.
Mm-hmm. So maybe the next step in evolution is a step backwards. We need to have thick skulls like Neanderthals so that the cell phone radiation can't penetrate.
If you can't feel the 5G, you can't get to COVID.
The family is still being studied in the hopes that their unique mutation will help us cure osteoporosis.
Mm.
So again, this is one of those weird leaps of logic that shouldn't work, but sometimes does. Some people are colorblind, which means that they either can't see certain colors or can only see a reduced color spectrum. And if we're basing our scientific theories on Shyamalan logic, that means that there must be people who have super color vision, which is stupid.
I guess it kind of makes sense if you have sommeliers who are, you know, can smell the shit out of everything. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's stupid and also true. It's called tetrachromacy.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Most of us only have three types of cone cells in our eyes.
Right.
We're lowly, pathetic trichromats. Our eyes and brains create all the colors of the rainbow from just three actual colors, red, blue, and green.
Right.
That's all we're actually perceiving with our sad little trichromat eyes. But tetrachromats have an additional type of cone that potentially allows them to see a fourth dimensionality of color.
Hmm.
Which probably sounds cooler than it is. It's probably just like a brighter shade of pink.
I guess. Or it gives you people like, you know, Picasso or Dali or people who can paint with such a weird variance of colors that it comes alive, it stirs something in you.
But their ability to use the colors that we can't see wouldn't affect us at all. If they had tetrachromacy, they would probably be painting really crappy things because they would look amazing to them and we wouldn't be able to perceive what they're seeing.
And here's where my logic gene fails me. That actually sounds way smarter than what I was saying. So, point to you, sir.
I kind of don't know where it comes in handy.
Right.
But this condition, it turns out, is much more common in women. Studies have theorized that between 15 and up to potentially 50% of women have some degree of tetrachromacy.
How do you have some degree of tetrachromacy? Like, is there a percentile number of, like, extra cones that they get?
That's a good question, but I believe it's sort of a spectrum. So I'm assuming there are degrees of tetrachromacy. Some of them are limited tetrachromats, and some of them are like full spectrum tetrachromats. Hmm. I'm definitely not one of them. I'm also not a woman, so I guess that makes sense because I would have less likelihood of having it. Hmm. But that doesn't seem fair. I want to see the fourth dimension of color.
It doesn't seem fair. Why don't you cry about it, saddlebags?
I think that's what I'm doing.
Okay.
It's also theorized that tetrachromats might have superior night vision.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. That I would pay money for.
So don't get involved in a shootout with a woman after dark.
That bitch will plug your ass.
Only shoot your wife in broad daylight. If you learn only one thing from this podcast... If you're going to shoot your wife.
Times of day to murder your female spouse.
Which is counterintuitive because if you want to get away with it, you would think you would do it at night.
Right.
But if you
Why would you do it in broad daylight?
But if she is also armed, make sure you do it during the day. That's the only time you have a chance.
Right.
Potentially. She's only 50%.
I feel the deck is just kind of stacked against us men. We're like, we're superiorly strong, but only if we get close to you.
Oh, yeah. Men really have suffered through the ages because we are so disadvantaged.
We got a hold of the power structure early, but I mean, if you look at just all the adaptive traits, they've got them all.
We don't have to sit down to pee.
They don't technically either. Depending on how they want to feel for at least a couple hours afterwards.
I enjoy peeing standing up, especially in the snow. So speaking of things that are fantastic, you have heard of Mr. Fantastic.
No.
From the Fantastic Four?
Oh, yes. Okay. I was going porn. I was like, is this...
It's going to be a bad porn name because the whole thing with Mr. Fantastic is that his body is like rubber.
Yeah.
That's like Mr. Flaccid.
Rubber is not necessarily flaccid.
No, I guess a lot of dildos probably are made of rubber.
Yeah, latex rubber, like various kinds of surgical, you know, schmeh.
So Mr. Fantastic, he is the man whose body is like rubber. He can flex into all the... Yeah.
Captain Stretchy Pants.
Yes. There's a real life condition called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome.
Okay.
Which results in extreme flexibility and elasticity of the joints and skin.
Oh, I think I've fucked somebody with this.
People with this condition are capable of extreme body contortions. But obviously the condition is also a disease with some downsides, like thin skin and joint pain. They bruise super easily. Their life expectancy is low. We talked about there are trade-offs here. But you don't have to have a disease to become capable of superhuman contortions. You can just be super determined to make people uncomfortable.
Not to mention yourself, at least at the outset.
Because contortionists have been amazing and astounding people and making them cringe and giving them the willies and making them uncomfortable since the ancient civilizations of Mongolia, India, and China.
I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's a lot of crossover between yoga and contortionism, so that's kind of where it started. But while yoga tends to be practiced for health and wellness, contortion is more performative, more of a circus art. And indeed, it was exhibited in the ancient Roman circuses. They had contortionists.
I honestly completely understand. The story behind what I just said was this was an EMT driver who I met when we were at College of the Redwoods. She started talking about what she wanted to do with her life, and she was like, I'm actually a contortionist in my spare time. It basically just meant that she could, hyperextend a bunch of her joints and do a bunch of really weird shit with her body. But what it meant for her in the bed was basically she became somewhere between a barnacle and an octopus. She would just sort of wrap around me and inhibit movement. I was like, okay, well, this doesn't help me do what I'm here to do to you at all.
That is the least sexy combination of creatures I can imagine. A barnacle and an octopus.
So was the sex.
Speaking of the varieties of contortion and maybe the sex side of it, I find this interesting. Contortionists do tend to have slightly more flexible spines than average people, but typically only in one direction.
Hmm.
So they're usually classified as either, quote, front benders or, quote, back benders because their spine tends to be more flexible in that particular direction.
Interesting.
Yeah. I wonder if a contortionist takes that into account when they date other contortionists. Like, I'm sorry, I only date front benders.
Baby, I can't date another backbender. You don't know what that does to both of us.
Backbenders are the worst.
I mean, we can spoon like a motherfucker, but neither one of us is going to come out of that happy.
Like, it's got to be an issue of sexual compatibility and, like, ergonomics. if I'm front bending and she's back bending, there's going to be damage. Someone's going to get hurt.
Considering the fact that I'm about as flexible as your average cinder block, I fucking couldn't tell you. I wouldn't even know how to theorize.
And like, you must be super popular if you can bend front and back. That's like being...
You gotta be a unicorn of the like, flexible world.
Don't worry, baby. I bend both ways.
This is the new bi brag, I guess.
It's like, yeah. Or like, or blood type. You're just the universal donor. You're the universal bender. Many people believe in the idea of being double jointed, but this isn't an actual condition. Everyone has the same number of joints. You just happen to have weird flexibility. Duncan is demonstrating some kind of creepy weird shit with his hand. But that is not, those are not double joints.
They're not.
FYI, that's just creepy, weird flexibility, which is describes a contortionist.
Yeah.
Most contortionists are really flexible people who have worked hard to be able to stuff themselves into boxes. I'm way too claustrophobic to be a contortionist. Because, like, judging from all the movies I've watched, the primary occupation for a contortionist is to be stuffed into boxes in order to assist with heists.
You're like, that's not my life goal. I don't want to be stuffed into a lockbox for an hour.
I feel like you're the lowest rung of the heist. If you're the guy getting stuffed into something.
Not the driver?
Yeah, that's true. What was his name?
Twitchy.
Twitchy Jim. It was Speedy.
Was it Speedy or Twitchy? I thought it was
his
Twitchy.
His name was Speedy, but we said that's...
Like Myth you, Mike. You know, oh, no.
Call back to another episode of Heists. We should have talked about contortionists in our heist episode.
Yeah, well, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda.
Let's move on to our next superpower.
Please do.
Every year, an international competition called the World Memory Championships offers the promise of fame and glory to a group of nerds with a very weird hobby and way too much free time. Each of these competitors has two things in common. One, the freakish ability to memorize bizarrely long lists of completely useless information, like random numbers and dictionary words. And two, I'm assuming, their virginity. This is not something that's super popular and is going to make you a hit with the ladies.
I mean, it kind of seems to predispose you towards stalking.
Because you can remember...
addresses, routes of travel, like known associates. It would just seem to make you either like an ideal field agent or a stalker.
That's a weird place to take it to. I don't know why your
brain goes there. That's where my
brain goes there. I'm impressed. In this era of cell phones, anyone who can remember one phone number is amazing to me. I know zero phone numbers.
I know two. Mine and my wife's.
Last week, I forgot my four-digit PIN code from my ATM.
That's pretty fucking sad. And this is from a dude who forgets his own birthday on occasion.
I do online banking all the time. I never go to the bank. And I don't like cash. If I can avoid like actually holding cash, it's gross. Even before COVID-19, I didn't want to touch a disease vector like cash. So I don't
know. Basically, like making out with a fucking mosquito. It's a bad plan.
Yeah. It's making out with everyone who has touched that cash. Yeah. And people, I've seen people like stuff cash into their shorts. I've seen women
boobs put it ass by their crack boob. Yeah,
they put it in their shoes. I one time was working as a clerk at some store, and a guy came in, pulled sweaty cash out of his shoe and paid me in sweat soaked cash. And you have to take it. It's like legal tender and it's disgusting. It's unacceptable. But yeah, the only phone number that I have memorized at this point is 911. That's it. And I'm not even confident that in an actual emergency. So the most famous and accomplished mnemonist is 8-time world memory champion Dominic O'Brien.
Okay.
He once memorized the exact order of 54 decks of playing cards, which...
Sweet fuck, why?
Which at first I thought that's not going to come in handy, and then I'm like, you know, it would, like... But why would you do that publicly? Like, you're just going to get banned from Vegas. Because that's some hardcore card counting.
Oh, yeah.
He's in the Guinness Book of World Records. He also provides memory trainings and regularly tours and lectures. He's obviously a freak of nature, but maybe not as superhuman as he seems. For years, people believed that memory champions had some kind of weird superhuman abilities, that they had, like, photographic memories, which is not real. Photographic memories don't actually exist.
There is a version of it that exists. Jack Nicholson supposedly has one. He can read a script once and remember all of the lines, both his and somebody else's.
There are tons of rumors of all kinds of people having these crazy photographic memories. And the consensus view is that no one does. Didactic. So maybe Jack Nicholson can, but he certainly hasn't submitted himself for a study. And if he did, I would put my money on him not being able to read a script once and then recall all of it. Hmm. Because people just don't do that. Hmm. People do have a spectrum of memory ability. So some people are naturally better at remembering things, but almost everyone has some pretty basic limits. And most people can improve their memory pretty easily with some really simple techniques. The most famous and effective technique that almost all of them use now is called Memory Loci, or the Memory Palace.
Nah.
Have you heard of the Memory Palace?
Yeah, everyone, I mean, if you've ever read any of the Hannibal series, Hannibal has a famously huge memory palace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everything in the structure, everything about the structure is a memory.
Thomas Harris, those are good books.
Thomas Harris, thank you.
An article by Brian Handwerk in Smithsonian Magazine describes how the memory palace works. Quote, users create a visual map in the mind, like a familiar house or walking route, and then connect memorable multisensory images to each location to retrieve them later. To remember a string of unrelated words, for example, they might map the body, starting with the feet, then moving to the knees, and so on. The contestant then places two words at each location to memorize a list of unconnected terms. So, for example, if the words for feet are moss and cow, he might picture walking on a mossy field, getting bits of moss stuck on his socks, and watching a smelly cow grazing on the moss. It's important to have all those different senses engaged, because that helps you with the memory. Like, if you've ever smelled something that instantly triggers a memory.
Right, and yeah, I know this about how memory works, right?
So it's silly, but it works. It's engaging all of these senses in your mind, associating them with the word and the memory, and then you just walk through your memory palace. You go up, so for instance, if it's your body, you just go up from your feet to then your knees to the next, and you remember all of these associations, and so those words come to you really easily. It's pretty amazing that this stuff works.
It is. I wonder if they've ever, like, I'd love to see a longitudinal study how they test people who have, like I do, a learning disorder, where, like, memory is specifically a serious problem, especially the transfer from short-term to long-term. So, because I've tried doing these memory things before. It was part of my programming, or I guess you call it deprogramming, if they're trying to fix my memory issue, from, like, age 12 and 11 on. And it sucked. None of them worked. Like, I essentially had to just sort of come up with instinctual ways of helping me learn things and just explain to people, look, I may not remember your name for the next five interactions. It's not because I don't like you. It's just because it's not going to stay. I'll remember you as, you know, nice guy with red sweater, because that's what my brain assigns.
Yeah, it seems like it would be harder with something like names, because a name, how are you going to associate? You can't just be like, all right, I think of feet and I think of David. I guess you would do things like David and Goliath, right? That is how I've remembered. I'm used to be terrible with names, and I still am for the most part, but I will occasionally apply this technique. So I will meet someone named Jennifer. I might think of the TV show Friends and Jennifer Aniston. So when I saw that person again, I would go, oh, TV show Friends, because I can't remember their name, but I remember that I told myself, when you see this person, think of Friends. And that is so much easier. Like, I'll make that connection and I'll remember the name.
Where I go wrong is I try and do the exact same thing when I've tried to do this in the past, but what I end up calling them is Friends. I remember the reference, which was a TV show. Like, oh, hi, TV show.
Like, well, they say that it takes time. Supposedly it takes a lot of time to sort of build this up, but that over time you will get better at it. I think it's something that you would have to practice. That actually leads us to the next part of this. Researchers have shown that using this technique actually causes physical changes in the brain. So neurobiological connective patterns begin to arrange themselves for maximum efficiency. In other words, using this technique gives you superpowers, as long as memorizing the phone book qualifies as a superpower.
Because, stupid human tricks.
Because memory champions, it turns out, report that their abilities tend to have very little practical value.
Truly?
In other words, like, these, they still lose their keys. They forget to walk the dog just like the rest of us.
Right.
You know?
Which wouldn't help me at all, which is basically my living memory. It's not so great.
They probably don't forget their ATM pins, though.
Maybe not.
I'm a moron.
Maybe not. Dude, I've literally been stumped for at least 15 seconds before when asked my own birthday, at least on two occasions.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's move to the next superpower.
Woo!
So Aquaman is a fictional character, and at this point, there is no human... There is no human that we know of who can talk to the fishes. Actually, anyone can talk to fishes. It's just whether the fishes...
talking at them.
It's just whether the fishes can talk back. Like, I could talk to my cat. I do talk to my cat.
You talk at your cat.
You can yell at the fishes.
Oh, and I have. Oh, have I yelled at fishes.
That's not impressive. That's just quarantine. That's just, I've spent too much time in my damn house, and I have a fish tank.
That's not impressive. That's just quarantine. It's a great line.
But there are humans who are actually more aquatically oriented than the rest of us.
Mm.
So they are the closest thing we have to amphibians. My cousin is a great example.
Web feet?
No, not physically. So my cousin, do you know Nate? You didn't add him to your memory palace?
Dude, I'm lucky if I have a memory hutch.
My memory shack is not what it used to be.
Dude, no, it's a rabbit hutch. It's like, it's got one room. It's filled with like chicken wire. It's not, it's pretty flimsy.
Oh. I have a memory outhouse. That's all that's left.
Just memory dumping over the place.
Just dumping all over. You would remember if you met Nate. He is a Renaissance man.
Is this fireman. Very pretty boy who lives in L.A.?
I wouldn't say pretty boy. I would say he is an attractive man, but pretty boy doesn't apply because he's very, like, masculine. This is a guy who's a fireman. He's an incredible photographer. I don't know if you've seen his stuff. Like, it's amazing. And an extreme sports guy. So he's pretty much like an overachiever in almost every way. I love him and, you know, kind of hate him a little, too. And one of his most extreme hobbies is freediving. Are you familiar with freediving? With freediving?
Freediving, no. Freediving, yes.
I've always been fascinated by people who engage in the sport of freediving because it's notoriously dangerous. It involves diving to insane depths without any breathing apparatus.
Right.
It's just you, some fins, and your lungs. The current world record is 214 meters or 702 feet. That is bonkers. So first, you have to hold your breath for a ridiculous length of time. The current world record for breath holding, or static apnea, as it's called, is held by freediver Branko Petrovic, 11 minutes and 54 seconds. That's like half a sitcom. That's crazy.
That's lunacy.
So you're holding your breath for inhuman durations and simultaneously subjecting your body to extreme pressure, literal pressure. You mentioned the bottom of a deep swimming pool. You can feel that pressure on your ears. It's uncomfortable. That's, you know, maybe 7 feet, 10 feet. A deep pool, you know, maybe goes down to 15 feet or something.
I would say 12 feet, sir.
12 feet, exactly. So for reference, 33 feet is considered one atmosphere. So right now, when we're walking around in the regular world, there is air pressure. The volume of air that's around us is exerting weight on our bodies. And if you go down underwater, if you go down 33 feet, you've then doubled that pressure. You're now down an extra atmosphere.
Right.
When you double or quadruple that pressure, it compresses all of the air pockets in your body, your lungs, your sinuses. That's the discomfort you're feeling in your ear. It's super intense. I used to dive with equipment, and I never went past 100 feet. So holding your breath more than 10 minutes and diving to 700 feet is superhuman by any definition. That's over 20 atmospheres of pressure.
Yeah. Navy SEALs can't do that shit.
So I called Nathan to ask about how this works. I was really curious about this. I wish I had recorded our conversation. He's super interesting, and he really has a lot of great insight into this stuff.
Episode Mark 2. There's no reason we couldn't do this.
So that would be fun. We've never done an interview on here. That would be cool. He's not super active as a freediver anymore, but when he was active, he freedove to 165 feet on a single breath. That was his personal best. So my question to him was, are these people, including him, freaks of nature, or can anyone learn to do this? He said yes to both.
Yeah.
Those specific people are freaks of nature. Anyone who's holding their breath for 12 minutes is not a normal human. There is something different about them. You and I could train for years. We'd never be holding our breath for 11 minutes or diving to 700 feet. It's just not, we're not built that way.
Dude, I started smoking when I was 14. There's no fucking way.
You're not going past 12 feet. Neither of us are going 700 feet under the water voluntarily. there are scenarios.
Without brick shoes.
Yes. There are scenarios where it might happen. Don't pay your bookie. The difference is he would go down 700 feet and survive. We might go down 700 feet, but there would be no more podcast after that. But what he explained to me, I found really interesting. And if you think about it, it's common sense. All life on Earth comes from the ocean.
Yeah.
And there's a well-documented phenomenon called the mammalian dive reflex.
Hmm.
So if you immerse an air-breathing vertebrate in water, literally any air-breathing animal that has a spine, the body immediately reacts by conserving oxygen and optimizing the physiological processes for underwater survival. The heart rate slows down, blood redirects to vital organs, oxygen is shuttled to the heart and the brain. So according to Nathan, with just a little bit of training, mostly some yoga and meditative breathing techniques, anyone will quickly begin to acclimate. He said that within a matter of days, most people can stretch their static apnea times, their breath holding, to around 3 minutes, which seems crazy to me that it would just take a little while for that. But we are apparently built. It's essentially like unlocking dormant abilities that we've sort of evolved away from and yet are dormant within us.
Yeah. Me on the sort of believing side of the table, this doesn't sound that amazing to me. This sounds more like, yeah, okay, we have dormant abilities. I mean, you throw any baby, no matter how fresh out the womb, into a puddle of water, it's going to spread its arms and like float. It learns how to swim and at least float-ish.
I'm not sure that we should test that theory.
There are plenty of stories out there, anecdotal evidence, and videos.
There are also a lot of dead, drowned babies. That's why they put fences around pools.
There are, and that's because they don't swim so good. They float for a while, and then they drown because they get tired because they've got no muscle mass. But it's part of the, I think it's called the Gallant reflex, but it's basically, it's if you poke a baby or whatever, like it'll go, meh. Like there's certain things where
there's a name for that reflex. If you poke me, I'll go meh.
If you're holding a baby and you don't drop them, but
if you
sort of
slap
like
a baby, it will cry. There's a famous reflex
called the bastard reflex.
Called fuck you,
Rick.
Buddy.
No, but if you're holding a baby and you drop them, like you basically subject them to negative G's, you're still holding them, but you just go rink.
Hmm.
They'll throw out their arms and their legs. They'll do this thing, this reflex.
Negative G's? Is that like rap music that's not positive? That's not uplifting?
You're so what?
I've known some negative G's in my life.
Why you gotta be so negative, G? That's whack.
Oh, that was a dad joke.
There was dad joke. Cut.
No, I'm not even a dad. I'm like a cat dad. I got a cat. I guess that counts.
Cat dad joke.
Cat dad. That's a cat dad joke.
Wow. That's a different level of pathetic. Like dad joke, you're just like, I'm laughing to make you feel better.
Oh.
Cat dad joke, you're just like, bruh.
I feel like we got a little punchy. This is a long episode.
Just saying. Thank you again. Who was it who gave this to us?
That was Chrissy.
Chrissy, Instagram. Thank you for the very interesting and very long. I was worried, like, you know, if you could have one superpower, what would it be? Kind of episode. And I was just like, oh, fuck this nonsense.
But you just destroyed our next episode. So good job.
Fucking really?
No.
Okay. Don't do that to me. I'm exceedingly...
You just insulted all the people that suggested what would your superpower be. That would be a very short episode.
Yeah. Mine is very, very specific and no one would ever get it. Mine?
Yeah.
It's the ability to have anything that I draw, no matter how simple...
to dive to 13 feet?
Yes. I want to be able to dive to 20 feet without dying. No. Anything that I draw... no matter how simplistic, it comes out the way that I want it to be, and I can pull it from the page, and it wants to help me.
If I were a genie, and you wished that wish, I would slap the shit out of you. I don't know that a genie's allowed to do that.
They're really not.
They would make an exception, and just be like, what the did you even wake me up for this? That's your superpower?
You're not thinking about it.
Okay, explain.
So I draw a vial and say immortality juice. I can now pull it from the page.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, I get it.
And it's that.
I thought you meant just like being able to draw really well.
No.
You can draw what was in your head. That works great for people like you who are very artistic and you draw amazing things and you can draw realistically. Everything I drew would look like a stick figure nightmare.
Well, no, but that's
and I would
that's
be populating the world with Slenderman just left and right. It would be like the nightmare before Christmas.
All on its own. It, like, first of all, how the hell do you kill them? Second of all,
with an eraser. You chase them around with a. That would be my second wish to the genie. Immediately, it would be like.
Possess a eraser.
Remember that thing I just wished for? I need the thing that counteracts that, because that was a terrible idea. Oh, Chrissy, thank you, Chrissy, for the suggestion. And you guys keep those suggestions coming. We do have a few to get to, so it may be a few episodes before we get to it, but we will get to it. And again, that is really helpful to me. And make sure that you add us on Instagram. We are at Instagram.com/MidnightFacts for Insomniacs. We have our store now.
Yeah, full of merch.
Full of merch. You can rep your Insomniac pride. Show that you're one of the Midnight Masses. Again, no obligation to do it, but like Duncan pointed out last time, it is actually really an easy way for you to show your pride without having to go around like we ask you to, telling a friend. And
if you don't want to be like, hey, everybody, go see this thing, if somebody's like, hey, where'd you get that shirt? Or what the hell's that about? All you got to do is point to your shirt and be like, go look for this. Yeah, it's on to Googles.
Plus, I think they look cool.
And they do look cool.
I have zero shows coming up because of COVID, but I'm still booking stuff for May and later on. Some of it I'm not going to put on my website just because I don't know if it's going to happen. It's all in my little personal calendar. But you can go to ShaneRogers.net if you want to take a look at some pictures and stuff from past shows and even some clips of me doing comedy. And then we have a bunch more shows coming up, a lot of suggestions from you guys. So it's definitely happening. Anything you wanted to add, Duncan?
We just want to, once again, thank the hell out of all of you guys who are listening. You are what's keeping us sane in COVID. You're what's given us fun things to do and think about and joke about, giving me reasons to drink that don't involve boredom. So truly, I appreciate the shit out of it.
Knowledge is power.
And sleep is overrated.